Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. With me today, who has joined us before for, I believe, Summer Dreams and Kareem Minority of One, John Weinbach of Mandalay Sports Media, also director of Straight Out of LA and the other Dream Team. You have done some incredible sports documentaries. You have another one for SI Films called Patrick and Zoe. John Weinbach, how's it going?
It is good. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
So it's always fascinating to me how documentaries come about, because to me, I think, like, when I watch a documentary, I think, oh, that was a great idea. Why didn't anyone else do this before? So with Patrick and Zoe, you have two, Georgetown Titans who were great friends and great, warriors against each other in the league. And, some 10 years after Alonzo Mourning is retired and, quite a while after Patrick Ewing was this New York Knicks force, you have this great documentary about them on SI.com. How did this come about?
Well, it's interesting. We talk about it all the time in our company and just with, collaborators that I've worked with. Why do certain things get done versus other great stories? It's so hard. It just depends. In this case, we were lucky enough to we were in discussions with Sports Illustrated, wanted and continues to sort of expand their video profile in forms of series and short documentaries. So we had been in discussions with them. We had a number of, I'm sure you grew up like I did, sort of worshiping SI, and yeah, there's 1,000 stories in there that you want to tell as longer pieces in video. And they sort of wanted to do a combination of stuff they've covered, but maybe stuff that they haven't. And that's sort of how it started. And then sort of in a bit of just, good luck and timing and opportunity, I had been producing and directing a half-hour special on Kyrie Irving for Fox Sports. Mm-hmm. And Kyrie shares representation to great guys named Colin Smeaton and Perry Rogers. They represent Shaq, and they also represent, for marketing purposes, Alonzo Mourning. And we just got to talking the way, you do, and they said, there's no one's really ever delved into the whole, Patrick and Zoe and Zoe and Patrick and the Georgetown thing. And that sort of we sort of carried that on into SI conversations. And they said, we did a pitch, and it just so happened there was a young producer in Florida named Sam Froman, who kind of was a junior guy who had worked on Heat broadcast. He had a little bit of research done. We got connected to him. And that's how it came about. We pitched it to SI and they said, that's great. And frankly, I think part of the reason with this story, with these two guys, is, some topics are really over-covered, but then nobody seems to care when you do a documentary, like the 85 Bears or Bo Jackson, because they're such cultural titans.
Right.
And I think in this story, it's like two really well-known guys, but no one had really delved deep. You had seen stuff, at halftime or in profiles, in the under 5 minute category. But I think that's really why SI greenlit it, because it was one of these things everybody knows these guys, but no one really kind of got them together in a meaningful way. And so that's sort of how it came about.
I I'm a huge basketball junkie, huge basketball nerd, and even I, like, going back and watching this, forgot Patrick Ewing was a monster. I mean, just an absolute monster on the court, like, for Georgetown. Like, when he was at Georgetown, I was very young, so didn't quite have him on my radar, because I think I was, maybe 3 when he was drafted. But when he was with the Knicks, like, obviously this giant figure in the world of basketball. And he always seems to be, I don't know, underappreciated, which I don't know how that's possible, considering he was the center of the New York Knicks when they were, going to the finals. But for some reason, he just seems like he's just kind of pushed aside. Like, we have Hakeem and we have Shaq and we have David Robinson, but Pat just seems to get pushed aside. And we
get overlooked.
He went to 3 national titles. He was number 1 pick. He's the reason for, like, the the most controversial draft lottery of all time. Like, this is an important figure.
Well, and I think one of the great things about any kind of documentary project, and I'm a 1%er of basketball geekery, it was a vivid memory watching those Georgetown teams. And, the first basketball game I actually remember watching, I was like maybe 6 years old, was the 1982 national championship game.
Wow.
Because the Lakers had the first pick, and they basically were about to win a championship, and everybody didn't know, are they going to take Worthy? They were going to take maybe, I wasn't aware of this, but I remember my dad was a huge North Carolina fan and loved Worthy. and we didn't even know about Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And Patrick Ewing getting blocks like five shots, and everyone's like, and at that time he was known as Pat Ewing. And one of the fun things about the film is you unearth this archival material. You see his lower third in 1982 was Pat Ewing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just the way he called. But, you know, to address your thing, I think it's one of the unfortunate parts of the culture now where we have no memory, and nothing matters unless you're either a champion on the court or on social media. And it's like Patrick Ewing went to three Final Fours, could easily have won three championships, was the best player on the 84 Olympic team. I mean, Jordan had his coming out party, but if you watch, if you want to go into a YouTube rabbit hole and have fun, go to the Team USA 1984 tour. They played, an 84 Olympic team coached by Bobby Knight, played a series of exhibition games against NBA All-Stars. And not like nobodies. Magic, Bird, Parrish, McHale, Isaiah, everyone. And they won, like, I think, four out of the six games.
Wow.
And convincingly.
Yeah.
And you see Ewing is like, he's just, he was basically the, there's no one, I mean, nowadays I'm sure they'd have him shooting three-pointers. But he was like, you know, this incredible athletic marvel who had the athleticism and the grace of Kareem in terms of just his, he was so smooth, but he had that defensive ferocity of like a Bill Russell or, you know, what became, you know, Akeem. And he was so athletic and so dynamic. And he had that nice, even as a, in college, he had a, you know, it became more refined as a pro, but that kind of 15-foot jumper.
Yeah.
And he was a monster. And you know, he just had the misfortune of going to a Knicks team that kind of, you know, never found its way. And then when they did, they were outclassed by Michael Jordan. But, you know, he's a two-time gold medalist. He was a, he built, you know, when they talk about building the Big East, that was Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgetown built the Big East. And St. John's and Villanova and all that. But, you know, it's kind of like he's been defined by his losses more than what he won, and that's unfortunate. And I think that's, you know, sort of, you're right. I mean, he has been a little bit overlooked by history.
One of my favorite parts of the documentary is when it shows him in that game, in that 1982 game, and he's goaltending everything. Like, everything at the rim is goaltended. And I was just watching that thinking, if this happened today, the internet would eat itself. Like, it would be freaking out over someone just goaltending intentionally every shot. But it was this great moment from John Thompson saying, like, you know, basically go be a presence. Make them know that, you know, they're probably going to make a layup anyway, so you're going to take it out of the air no matter where it is. And it's like this really kind of fun intimidation, you know, technique.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, he's right. I mean, if you've played basketball, you know, when a guy keeps going up there and blocking shots, it does become, if you know, you get a second moment, you think, oh, God, is he going to be there? He's always going to be there. And I think, you know, that sort of was his arrival on the national scene. And you know, when you go and watch the 84 championship highlights, and by the way, that was a pretty good Houston team,
yeah,
too, that
very
they beat.
Good.
And you watch Olajuwon and Ewing, and, you know, it's Olajuwon is outclassed, just completely outclassed by Ewing. And you see Olajuwon as a much more raw prospect, still obviously devastating and athletic, but Ewing was much more the complete basketball player. And, you know, you talk about historical significance. Anytime a guy creates a rule change or an administrative change, it's significant. So Ewing was so good that they created the lottery. They changed the way that teams could qualify for the number one pick. I mean, part of that was because teams were tanking and really, really making the Sixers look like babies. I mean, you know, the Clippers and the, remember the Rockets got, you know, they got Akeem and they got Ralph Sampson basically back to back. So, they started changing the rules, but you know, anytime you create a new thing for someone, and that's what happened with the lottery, he's got to be pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, that was another great shot is that archival draft footage where it shows his basically like his player card on the screen, and it says, "Strengths, are you kidding me?" Like that's just like that's how dominant he was, and that's how great he was, and that's just the impact he had is that you didn't even have to list why he was good. Everyone just knew he was good. Yeah,
no, sure.
The Alonzo Mourning part of it is fascinating too because you know, I obviously wasn't connected to the league outside of fandom, and so I thought, I just always thought as a kid, like, Patrick Ewing and Alonzo Mourning hated each other. Like, they were just extreme battles, elbows, you know, obviously the fight against the Knicks, Larry Johnson in the late 90s, like, everything was just this battle, and yet they have, like, this really sweet friendship and mentorship off the court.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, you know, we all, when we work in the media, you hear about guys and their friends and their buddies, and this guy called this guy to text this guy to become a free agent, and you know, you're never quite sure what's real and what's not. With these guys, it's very real.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think it's progressed. There's 7 years between them. So, like, you know, when you meet someone when you're 15 and the other guy's, you know, 22, it's a different relationship than when you're, you know, 37 and 44 and have life, you know, accumulated.
Right.
I think it started as idol, you know. I think, you know, Alonzo just looked up to Patrick in a kind of idol way. And my favorite sort of anecdote that I just didn't know about and kind of unearthed doing the film was, you know, John, they were recruiting Alonzo Mourning. He was, you know, the clear number one prospect, center, menacing, defensive-minded, et cetera, sort of like a Patrick Ewing clone. And they go to the Nike ABCD camp, you know, lorded over by Sonny Vaccaro, I've also worked with on a, you know, film for ESPN. And John Thompson's there, and he calls up Patrick Ewing, who's already a star for the Knicks, and says, hey, Patrick, would you mind seeing old coach in New Jersey? And, oh, by the way, we're recruiting this kid named Alonzo Mourning. And, you know, Ewing tells the story. They drive to Princeton. He gets to the gym. He sees Thompson. He goes, all right, which is Mourning? And so he points him out on the floor, and he's stretching, and Ewing just makes a beeline in the gym, walks right over to, you know, Alonzo Mourning as he's stretching. And by the way, there's Kristen Leitner, and there's Sean Kemp, and there's Billy Owens, all these big-time prospects, and he introduces himself to Mourning, and as the story goes, you know, Mourning's eyes light up, and boom, game, set, match, like Mourning's going to Georgetown.
That's some vicious recruiting right there. That's really
right?
Intelligent recruiting.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays you probably have to do like 65 text messages and
right.
a tweet to, like, you know, do that. But it was really cool. And, you know, they, this sort of, they're in the, you know, NBA lore, these famous workouts at Georgetown. And by the way, we could have included, you know, Dikembe Mutombo.
Yes.
I mean, it was just, that's a whole other, you know, story, and it's great too. But we focused it on these two guys because they had these wars in the NBA as well, and they would work out against each other. And I think there you went from, you know, sort of idol to, you know, fan to mentor, mentee, and then as they get into the pros and go through these intense rivalries, I mean, there's no question, I think it was tough for them to navigate, in part because, you know, Pat Riley didn't want his guys fraternizing, but
right.
Pat Riley loved Ewing too. But I think going through these disappointments, you know, they would, one of the things that's crazy about the Heat and the Knicks, and we could talk about it in a second, is, you know, they played, it's the only time in NBA history two teams have played each other 4 years in a row, and each series has gone the distance. And, you know, they never played for anything beyond the second round. But, they you know, so with these, like, low-stakes, high-intensity series that were outrageously close, not particularly artful, but just insane because of the passion and the constant fighting and how close they were. And then and these two guys in the middle sort of maintaining peace amongst themselves even as they went to war with everyone else on the team.
Well, that's always the funny thing to me is the two parts of this. Is one, people today will say, oh, well, the Cavs and Warriors are rivals now because they played each other in the finals. It's like, well, I don't know about that. That, like, you have a real rivalry from like the 90s, like the Knicks and Heat, who actually hated each other and actually, you know, threw elbows and threw punches and everything and faced each other 4 years in a row and went the distance, like you said. And then the other part of that is people say, oh, all these guys are friends today. They can't really be competitors against each other. And it's like, well, Alonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing did a pretty good job of balancing the two. And they both understood once you go to the court, like, everything's changed. Like, it's about doing your job. It's about winning the game. And that was the
yeah.
difference. Like, they could separate that.
Well, what's also interesting, another little detail, and you have to watch real close to see it in the film, but the Patrick and Joe had an interesting little ritual they would do before games. You know, as the center tip was happening, all the other guys would be, you know, slapping each other's hands. Patrick and Zoe would kind of go to opposite ends of the court and sort of like be in their own space and then kind of come together for the tip. And I never noticed it until we were like rolling back the tape. I was like, wow, watch this. And they did it almost every game. And it was like their own kind of tacit, you know, acknowledgement that, hey, now's the time we have to get into like, you know, not friend mode.
Right.
And it's almost as if they slapped hands before the game, they would be they'd go back into dinner mode. You know, I think one of the other things that, you know, was really eye-opening, one of these things, it was in the news, but it wasn't really that well covered. When Zoe had his kidney crisis and the failure and all this stuff, you know, very serious stuff, and it happened right after the 2000 Olympics. When he had this diagnosis, Patrick, you know, offered, it wasn't just an offer to donate his kidney. He went in and he was a match.
Yeah.
To Zoe, and he would have been the guy. I mean, you know, they're 7 foot tall. They probably would match. He had a history of like, you know, high blood pressure, so the doctors didn't do it. To give a kidney to someone is no joke. And so I think it speaks volumes, and I also think that, you know, Alonzo, what he said in the film in terms of, you know, he really felt that Patrick was a big part of the reason that he was able to come back and, you know, ultimately win a championship.
Well, he's a huge part of that too. In the film, it talks about how Alonzo was in contract disputes with the Charlotte Hornets and you know, kind of asked for advice from Patrick and basically, you know, Charlotte or Miami. And Patrick's kind of like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you've got Miami. And he's like, no offense to Charlotte and where he actually coaches now, but like, you've got Miami and you've got Pat Riley. Like, go do this. And because of that, like, who knows where Alonzo ends up in his career and whether or not he wins a title, but it does kind of put him in these incredible situations that just add to the depth of their friendship and their story together.
Yeah, well, one part, we didn't get into it in the film because it's like, there's, again, so many different strands. As it is, you know, we wanted to make it shorter, is there was a moment in time when there was discussion between and among David Falk and the various ownership groups to actually bring Alonzo to the Knicks to have him play with Patrick Ewing.
Wow.
And John Thompson actually counseled Alonzo against that, and so did Patrick Ewing. He just said, you know, they tried that at Georgetown with the Kemi Mutombo. It didn't work. And so that would have been crazy. But, you know, we did kind of think it's funny. Here's Patrick Ewing in 2015, 16, wearing a Charlotte Hornets shirt, coaching the Hornets, and telling us, you got Miami, you got Charlotte, take your ass to Miami. And it's kind of like, maybe that wasn't the most politic thing for Ewing to say, but it was honest. But I think, you know, one of the other kind of really cool things about, you know, getting to be with these two guys and sort of having a casual interaction is, you know, you have these ideas about what guys are like based on, you know, watching them on TV or seeing a quick interview. You know, Patrick Ewing was, always kind of seen as aloof, quiet, you know, monosyllabic and not really that interesting. I mean, he has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And was really cool, and both of them, you know, and I think Zoe partially now because he's still so, they're both imposing, but, you know, Ewing's put on a few pounds, he's a little more casual, you know, morning is always so impeccably presented, you know.
He looks like he can still play. I mean, he's in great shape.
He's incredible. He's an Adonis, and he's like, you know, on the board of Georgetown and an executive here, and he's a real, real mover and shaker and deservedly so. But he kind of still puts on, you know, when you first meet him, he's not as warm at first as Patrick Ewing is. But as you get to know them both, they're really, you know, they give considerable and considerate answers. And when they're together, I just notice it more with Alonzo, at least I did. He kind of lights up when Patrick's around. He becomes more gregarious, he becomes more sarcastic. And that was, I think we were able to capture that a little bit in the film.
Yeah, when the two of them are together and over, you know, looking over pictures, and there's one where I think Alonzo's shooting a jumper at Georgetown, and they're joking about how like they weren't allowed to do that. Like they had to go get in the post. They didn't need a butterfly. They needed a bull. That's what John Thompson right. would tell them. Like that. Like those moments are really, you know, the film's great in and of itself, but those are the moments in the film that really just add this warmth to it and this real like special. You really see that kinship between them because of the way Zoe lights up, like you say, and the way you just see that mutual respect.
Correct. That's absolutely right.
So my last question for you, is it hard to make a film like this that is, I believe it's, 33 minutes, a little over 33 minutes? Is it hard to make a film that short because there is so much to add and there are so many strands of storylines in this film?
Yes. The answer is yes. I mean, most of the time, you know, I'm pretty aggressive about making stuff shorter. With this one, it's tough because we sort of pitched a certain story to SI and it included all of these elements, but then you get to doing it and it's sort of like, well, the significance of Ewing, you can't do that story unless you know just how great he was at Georgetown. And then the humanity of Ewing if you just do his pro years, you don't know about what he went through. I mean, he moved to this country when he was 11, 12 years old. He encountered really fierce and kind of outrageous racism. Yeah. Not that there's ever not good racism, but like, you know, it's not like he was playing in the early 60s.
Right.
He was playing in the early 80s, you know? And I mean, can you imagine if Anthony Davis went to an SEC game and there were guys, fans dressed as gorillas?
I mean, just
saying,
insane.
Anthony Davis can't read this? I mean, you know, it really is incredible. It's like, you know, they might as well have Klansmen outfits. And so that was in the Big East. And so it was pretty remarkable. And I think that, again, that part of Ewing's story has gotten completely forgotten. And, but to answer your question, yes, it's in this one, it's hard because you got really interesting childhood stories. They have this college connection. They have the shared mentors in both Thompson and Riley. Obviously, we could have done a half hour on just the Heat and the Knicks.
Sure.
but I think, you know, it can be tough, but that's where, you know, we have a great editor named Stephen Yao, who does a lot of work with us, also edited our Kyrie special, worked on the Kareem doc for HBO. You know, great team. So, and the SI guys were really supportive, and hopefully this is the first of many. I mean, look, Sports Illustrated is as great a brand as there is. And so, you know, they should be in the video game. They should have a brand that tells great stories, both from their magazines, archives, and just new ones. So really excited about that.
Well, it is truly a great way to spend 33 minutes and just a really fun viewing. Patrick and Zoe on SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com, and John Weinbach, director of Patrick and Zoe. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Zach. I really appreciate it.